Hello everyone, welcome to JTalk Extra Time. I'm John Steele, as usual, joined by another very special guest this week. It's Sean Carroll. Sean, how are you, mate?
I'm very good, John. How are you?
Yes, not too bad, thanks. We talked for a long time in the green room before recording, Sean, so I'm very conscious we might be going past our respective bedtimes. We better get down to it. But before we do, thanks for agreeing to come on Extra Time. I know that big pod listeners and patrons will know you very well from your work on the Big Pod. But thanks for coming on and helping out. It's much appreciated. Hopefully the listeners enjoy your guest spot this week. We should get to talking about J2. We're going to talk about the all of the round one games that took place over the weekend. I think it's logical enough that we'll start on Saturday, Sean. Two games to kick off the season took place on Saturday afternoon. There was a perfect start for the new Nagasaki boss, Takayuki Yoshida, with his side beating Kanazawa 2-1 at home. Nagasaki very quick out of the blocks in this game, Sean. 2-0 up inside the first 15 minutes on goals from Seiya Maikuma and Kaio Cesar. To be honest, as a neutral, this game got a bit more interesting early on in the second half when Kanazawa pulled the goal back. It was Shintaro Shimada, the striker on loan from Omiya, who found a lot of space on the edge of the box and scored with a fine left-foot finish. But I think in the end, Nagasaki held on fairly comfortably to pick up all 3 points, and that, I think that was probably the result we were expecting from that game. I want to bring you on to talk about the other Saturday game, Sean. There were goals galore in this one, also played in Kyushu, with Niigata winning 4-1 away at Kita Kyushu. I know you watched this game in full, Sean. Both goalkeepers made some good saves early on, didn't they? Especially Niigata's debutant, the youngster Koto Abe, in goal for them. Niigata went in front just before the half hour with a free header from a corner kick from Kazuhiko Chiba. But Kita Kyushu were level in this game just before half time. Very nice control and finish from Takamitsu Tomiyama, a striker on loan from Omiya. Kind of a bit of a pattern over the weekend, wasn't it? Strikers on loan from Omiya amongst the goals for their new teams. Niigata scored twice in the space of about 3 minutes around the hour mark to take control of this game. Sean, there was a header from Koji Suzuki, which had a suspicion of handball about it, and I think some of the Kita Kyushu players were questioning the awarding of that goal. I'm still not sure from the replay whether it was a handball or not. I think it was probably okay. And then a very unfortunate own goal from Yoshiki Sato made it 3-1. Niigata then managed to hit the post on a counter-attack before, with about 15 minutes left, the twinkle-toed Shion Honma sweeping in a fourth goal for Niigata. And yes, they eventually won the game 4-1. We should mention the strong knitwear performance from Niigata's boss, Alberto Puig, on the sidelines as well, Sean, especially in the first half. Very impressive sweater and a scarf combination. But I know you watched this game in full, so what did you make of Niigata's big win at Kita Kyushu?
I think you've covered a lot of it there. I mean, including the knitwear, it was fantastic. He seems like I don't know, there's some foreign coaches and players who come over here and you feel like they're not really, I don't want to say not taking it seriously, but you know, they're not really invested completely. It's just another stop on their travel around in earning money through football. But he does seem like he's really invested in his time here. He seems like he really enjoys it. You get that feeling from him in his interviews on the sort of the pre and post match interviews, and he's fairly active on Twitter as well. So yeah, he seems like he's really really keen to make an impression here, which is good, not just with his knitwear but with his football. And I think Albirex were vastly the better team. I think a lot of people have been worried about Giravans this season. They lost a lot of key players after they faded towards the end of last year anyway, but enough of their players had left impressions that got them picked up by bigger clubs or returning to their parent clubs, I was concerned about their defence. I think they definitely lost Fukumori, the left back. The right back, obviously, went to Albirex. I never know if it's Fujiwara or Fujihara. I never know how you read it, but yeah, one of them. They did not look good defensively. The first goal for Niigata by Kazuhiko Chiba was just a completely unmarked header from inside the 6-yard box from a corner, which even at the when I played in the Sussex County League, that was unforgivable kind of defending. And you mentioned that the own goal was unlucky, but I think as well that it was an entirely avoidable goal to concede. If there was more talking at the back, someone could have told him there was no Niga to play in the 6-yard box. He could have taken a touch. He could have just left it to run through for the keeper. I think it could just be teething problems with new players looking to bed in, or it could just be that these players are not as good as the defenders they had last year. But on the other hand, yeah, Niigata, they looked very good. They were clicking, and there hadn't been too many changes in the central positions. They seem to have a few injuries. I know Kojima, the goalkeeper, is injured. Michael James or Michael Fitzgerald or however he's... whatever his name is, I think must be injured too, because he was pretty much ever present at the bat last year and wasn't in the squad. But yeah, I think important as well for Koji Suzuki to get on the score sheet straight away, to coming in and filling in for Chong Tese. That'll obviously be good for his confidence. Shion Honma as well is one of, if not the best players in J2 at the moment. So for him to get up and running early will only help. You wonder a bit if Niigata have the legs to make a real promotion challenge. If they get too many more injuries, you wonder how they'll fill in for them. But yeah, an outstanding start. But I think they were definitely helped by the fact that the Giravants are some way from the team that started last season.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think, Niigata, they do look strong. Looking at the front three is good. Even Yoshiaki Takagi had a good game, didn't he? I think he got 2 assists in this one. So yeah, I think that they're going to be exciting to watch, but yeah, I tend to agree. We're kind of eager to draw conclusions, aren't we? But still 41 games to go. So we'll have to wait and see.
And the goal they conceded as well was not great defending. It was a fairly simple ball over the top. As you said, Tomiyama took it very well, but he was left in space and the Niigata bat line was sleeping. So you just wonder against the better teams, who are better defensively and don't give up. You know, if you take away the two goals, the own goal and the set piece that were pretty much gifted, then you've only got that one goal advantage. And against the better teams in the division, I don't know if you're going to get away with all 3 points, certainly, or even a point. So, yeah, certainly there'll be plenty of room for improvement. But as I said, yeah, I think with the players they've got out at the moment, there's still a bit of depth there, assuming that those players come back in sooner rather than later.
Yeah, very much so. Good start for Niigata and a pretty decent start for Nagasaki as well. Should we talk about some of the Sunday games then, Sean? We had another new manager getting off to a winning start away from home. It's Chokui Jay in charge at Kyoto this year. His team scored 2 late goals to win 2-0 away at newly promoted Sagamihara. Akihiko Takeshige, Sean, the new goalkeeper at Sagamihara in from Yokohama FC, got away with 2 mistakes in the first half of this game and 1 in the second. So, he was a lucky, rode his luck for a long time in this game. The first one was the back pass that we had a kind of message exchange about. He just picked up a back pass inside his own 6-yard box. Incredibly, the referee didn't see it or chose to ignore it to save him some embarrassment. I don't know. He also managed to drop the ball onto his own crossbar in the first half, didn't he? And spilled another low ball in the second. As it was, Kyoto left it very late to score the 2 crucial goals. Jordi Bice headed in a corner to make it 1-0 with about 8 minutes left. Substitute Naoto Misawa, favourite player of mine, lashed in a pretty ferocious drive about 3 minutes later to seal the win for Kyoto. This was another game that you watched in full, Sean. What did you make of Kyoto and Sagamihara?
I think Sagamihara look like they're going to have quite a job to stay in the division. Again, it's only one game, and it's stupid to make predictions like that. But I think the way they didn't approach the game with any kind of confidence. You know, whenever they were on the ball, they didn't look like they felt they could really create anything. They made very little going forwards, and I think it just, yeah, it wasn't a great start. I know they're, I don't know how you pronounce it. Is it Romelu? Homolo? Homolo. I think he's either not in the country yet, or he arrived late, or he's injured. He wasn't in the squad. Their new Brazilian goalkeeper, Aginor, similarly not, well, he's definitely not here yet because he obviously can't get in as a new visa holder. A Brazilian centre-back they signed as well. Giro Camata they signed from Cachoeirense, who's injured. So, you know, there's some key players still to come in. So, you know, there's plenty of games to improve. But, yeah, they certainly looked a bit nervy, a bit unsure what to do. They obviously didn't have the best opponent in the, you know with Chalky J teams that they're going to run, they're going to be hard work. And it was pretty much attack against defence for a lot of the game. It almost had a feeling with 15 minutes to go that this was going to be a Sagamihara 1-0 win. Kyoto had so many chances. Tadanori Lee at one point somehow managed to sort of drag the ball wide when it looked harder to do that than score. And I sort of felt like maybe this is going to be one of those days where it was very windy as well, which maybe didn't help Kyoto, who, you know, obviously wanted to kind of get the ball down and try and build attacks nicely. But yeah, it was Kyoto did look, they looked good. They lacked a little bit of punch up front, but obviously Utaka only came on as a second half sub, so not quite fully up to match fitness after he picked up the virus and joined in training late. But I think, yeah, Kyoto, they looked decent. But Sagamihara, yeah, they've got quite a bit to do. And yeah, the back passing thing was a very interesting one. I think it was a bit like, you know, when you're obviously I never did this because it's illegal, but you know, when you use a bus saver ticket or something on a day that it's not valid for. I think if you get on and you front up and you look confident enough, the driver's not gonna look too close to you. Maybe that's what Takeshige was thinking. He knew it was a bad.
Are you suggesting that he just tried to style it out, Sean?
I think so. I think he just thought, there's no, if I just pick it up and act like it's perfectly normal, there's no way the ref is gonna blow the whistle, because yeah, it was very odd. It was quite clearly a pass back to the keeper. But yeah, he got away with it. So all power to him.
Yeah, fair enough. I think that's a pretty good overall assessment of the game as well. I watched Sagamihara quite a lot last season in J3, and I'm still not quite disbelieving that they made it to J2, but it was a bit of a surprise. If you watch them casually, if you watch any of their games casually, for example, while multitasking or looking at your phone, every time you glance up, Sagamihara will be winding up a long throw in the sort of opposition's final third, but they never seem to come, they never seem to amount to anything. They're always, you know, cleared by the first man, or the trajectory is not right. So I think, yeah, they definitely have the players that you mentioned that they have missing. It's definitely Homolo that they need back sooner rather than later, I think, to give them a little bit extra up front. But yeah, I guess Chokui J will be very pleased to get an away win and a clean sheet in his first game in charge. I don't suppose Sagamihara's problems will be keeping him or any of the Kyoto players awake at night. We should talk about another new manager getting an away win in round one, Sean. Ken Iwase, his Omiya side, did two surprising things from my point of view. First of all, they started their game away at Mito with an all-Japanese starting 11. It's not often that Omiya achieve that feat. Another thing that Omiya rarely do is come back from a goal down to win. They also managed to do that in this game, didn't they? Winning 2-1. Shunpei Fukuhori put Mito ahead early on a quick counter-attack, and it was almost 2-0 shortly after that. Omiya's Keisuke Nishimura had to head a shot off the line. Omiya eventually equalised with about 20 minutes to go, and it was a pretty impressive goal from their rookie Masaya Shibayama, a lovely curler from outside the box. I'm told by Mike Innes that he's one to watch this season, Sean, Masaya Shibayama. The winner came with about 7 minutes left, a really good diving header from Kanji Okunuki, from a swirling Kazuaki Mawatari cross out on the right. So, tell me what you made of Omiya, Sean. And we had a question on Omiya from Steve Fryer at RDJ01Talk. He's interested in Ken Iwase, his reputation in Japan, what you know about him, and just your thoughts on this game overall.
My answer about what I know about Ken Iwase is going to be very short, in that I don't really know much about him. I think he coached at Urawa for a while, in the sort of the youth setup, or sort of, you know, one of the sort of, not behind the scenes, but, you know, on the coaching staff. But yeah, it seemed, I honestly don't know much about him at all, so I wasn't really sure what he was going to bring to the team. Obviously taking over from Takagi for this season, the first thing that I wouldn't say surprise me, but you know, the amount of centre backs that Almia have, they've got pretty good depth in that position, and he seems to be shifting from a three at the back to four. So that was quite a big change from a couple of years of Takagi, who obviously was much preferred having three at the back with wing backs. I think they bought in. I think I really like Mawatari as a player. I don't know what you call it, not quite faded, but he was very good at Tokushima Vortis maybe 4 or 5 years ago. And then he kind of drifted around. I think he was at Hiroshima, he was at Kawasaki, he was at Shonan, and never really lived up to the potential I thought he had. But I think he's a very good player. He can play on either side, so he could become key for them this year. And they've got quite a few options in those positions. Watabe is another player like Onaga as well. Yamada, obviously, I think was a centre-back originally, but he was playing on out wide for them last season. So they've got options out wide. They just seem to have, they're one of these clubs that, I don't know, they almost have too big a squad. When you look through the squad list, it's like they've just got so many players there. It must be difficult, I think, sometimes for the coach to really nail down. I think it's true of a lot of teams in J2. The squads sometimes stretch into sort of 30, 32 players, and you're thinking, I'm not really sure it's necessary to have that many, you know, sort of really drill it down to 25 or so and make sure that you can kind of, you know, everyone has kind of got a role. So I don't know. The fact they didn't have any foreigners playing, I wasn't especially surprised. I've not been overly impressed with, I'm not sure how you pronounce his name. Is it Klajic? Klajic? He's never really looked assured in the games I've seen him playing. Haskic as well, the striker, he struggled with a few injuries, but he's never really looked like he's going to take J2 by storm. Iva obviously is a proven scorer at this level, but seems to have had his injury knocks and obviously hasn't played for over a year now, I'd say, since he was really banging the goals in for Yokohama FC. So I think, yeah, they've got some good young players. This Shibayama, yeah, it's the first I've sort of seen or heard of him, but he looked tidy, as you know, I think a lot of players every year in the J League come through and look tidy, look like they carry a bit of a threat. It's, for me, the issue is can they build on it? Can they continue to improve, or are they just going to kind of ride the high of getting a bit of attention as one to watch, and then suddenly, before you know it, they're 29 and they're transferring to Fagiano or Okayama kind of thing. So let's hope he builds upon this and keeps improving. The guy who scored the second goal is Kanji Okanuki, is a player I do like. I think he's got something a bit different about him. He can create chances, he can score chances. I think he spent a bit of time out injured last year, as Almia had a lot of injuries last season. I don't know if that was just the schedule, if it was the way that Takagi had them training or what. But yeah, I think if Iwase can settle upon his preferred sort of 15, 16 players and let them pick up some kind of rhythm, they'll certainly do better than last season. This game, as you say, to come from behind. Mito obviously are a bit of an odd team. They were last year very, very positive going forward, but not exactly what you'd call organized at the back. And as ever, they lost a lot of players over the off-season, whether players that were theirs who impressed and were snapped up, or players that they had on loan who did well and then went back to their parent club. So they're kind of doing what they do every year and starting afresh again with six or seven new players. But yeah, Akiba seems to want them playing fairly carefree football. So it looks like there'll be good entertainment for neutrals again this season. They've got some good players going forward. I quite like, is it, I forget his name, is it Ando, the guy that was at Machida last year?
Oh yeah, Mizuki Ando, yeah.
Yeah, Mizuki Ando, I like him. He's got something about him. Fukuhori, I think, is decent as well. They brought in Yamane, who, how was it you referred to him? Is it barrel chested? Was barrel, that your
yeah,
mind?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, between us, we came up with that, yeah.
Yes. So yeah, he's another one. They've definitely got options going forward. They'll definitely create chances and score chances. So yeah, for Almia to ride out that storm, you know, it was a tricky, I think, a tricky fixture for them. So to to come back from a goal down and take the 3 points, I think will definitely steady the ship a little bit after a horrendous season last year. Plenty to look forward to.
Yeah, all good points. I think Omiya are never short of squad players or centre backs, but they have been criticised for lacking character in the past, haven't they? So to come from a goal down and win away from home in the first match, I think will please everybody connected with Omiya at the moment. Sean, there was another away win in J2 over the weekend. It was for Okayama. They picked up their away win 2-0 away at Tochigi. Very visually displeasing kit clash in this game. Yes. I don't know the way to describe it. So just to set the scene, Okayama played in their all white away kit, but Tochigi's home kit is violet, sort of a violent yellow shirt and socks with white shorts. So you've got both teams playing in white shorts, which is a big no-no for me. I don't know how you feel about that.
Well, that happened in the Sagamiharu Kyoto game as well. Kyoto's home kit was much publicised as being that red and purple affair, and Sagamiharu wear sort of a green, I don't know what you call it, not quite bottle green, but it's like a kind of green with white sleeves. It's like a sort of a Sunday league kind of kit, really, with white shorts. And then Kyoto wore their white away strip with purple trim, and it wasn't too difficult, but both teams were wearing white shorts, and I was thinking, I'm not really sure that kind of red and purple clashes with green and white, but yeah, and Tochigi as well, it wasn't great.
Yeah, it wasn't. I think you're right that it wasn't difficult, but it was unnecessary. Yes, I think. Yes. Speaking of unnecessary, Sean, we should talk about Okayama's opening goal. In my opinion, this was a fairly nonsensical penalty given for a handball against Yukito Omoya, I think was making his J-League debut in this game. It's clearly ball to hand. I don't know if that rule still exists now. I'm very old, so perhaps it doesn't exist, but the ball hit his leg, didn't it? Then came up onto his hand. Kiwara Miyazaki scored the penalty to make it 1-0. That was midway through the first half. Okayama had a few chances to add a second, but they found Tochigi's goalkeeper Shuhei Kawata in good form as usual, player that usually impresses me. However, he was eventually beaten by a drive from Kohei Kiyama with about 15 minutes to go in the game. So Okayama won this game 2-0. Sean, we've slagged off the kits already, but what about that penalty decision against Yukito Omoya?
Yeah, it wasn't good, was it? I think, I don't know, I think the handball rule is a bit of a mess these days. Obviously there's no VAR in J2 this season, and obviously that's something that is pretty much splitting opinion around the world at the minute, and people, as is the want in any kind of discourse these days, of people tend to get quite angry in one direction or the other. But I think what the J-League have done well with VAR is say we're only using it for these four things. That's it. It's kind of for big decisions. Obviously that isn't the case in J2, so you're still getting these, you know, we're still getting decisions, which is difficult, obviously, for the referee in the moment to call. But I think the handball one, I think it should be simplified. It should just be, you know, has the player who handled it gained an advantage, whether it was on purpose or not? Would the ball have gone differently? And sometimes when the hand is kind of up, almost in line with the body, you're like, if it hadn't hit his hand, it would have hit his hip or his knee. Or I think in those cases, you shouldn't be giving a penalty, or maybe, you know, have an indirect free kick or something, because these kind of decisions is, you know, the players are moving around at pretty high speed, having to react in, you know, sort of to milliseconds to decisions. And I think, yeah, it was a harsh decision. But yeah, I think you can't really, I'm always loath to criticize referees too much, because it can't be easy, you know, with us being able to watch, well, if you watch on DAZN, you don't get that many highlights, any many replays. But if you get a replay or two, it does become a bit more straightforward. I think in the moment, you have to make an impulse decision on how it kind of felt to you almost. Did it look unnatural? How did the players around respond? That kind of thing. But yeah, I think I'm a little bit concerned about Tochigi this year, just because they're starting to play more games at this, I want to call it, is it Kanseki? Is that what it's called, the new stadium? And I think they might experience something similar to when Southampton moved away from the Dell to St Mary's, that their stadium is very kind of close. it builds a reasonably good atmosphere. It's very sort of picturesque stadium, and I think maybe sometimes when they get the if you want to call them the bigger teams that are used, you know, maybe teams that have dropped down from J1 or teams that have got aspirations to be pushing up to J1 that have got the big shiny new IKEA stadiums and stuff, that they're not really sure how to cope with it. And I think that worked to their benefit last year, and the way that Tasaka has them playing is very aggressive, very in your face, and I think that worked in their favour. And now that they're kind of in one of these, you know, fairly soulless stadiums with a running track, I wonder if that's just going to kind of take away a little bit of edge for them. Again, they lost quite a lot of players over the off season, so it could just be a bit of a bedding in period for new players. But Okayama are not a team that I have particularly high hopes for this year. I do like Miyazaki. I think he's a good player. He looked very good at Kanazawa a few years ago, and it never really worked for him when he went to FC Tokyo. He didn't really get any chances at all. So they've got a couple of decent players, Okayama, but they're not a team I can really see challenging at the top. I just worry a little bit about Tochigi. I think they'll probably be okay because they've got enough good players. Mori is a good player. They brought in Koto Ueda from Okayama, and Daisuke Kikuchi, I think, he's tailed off a bit in the last few years and bounced around from club to club. But if he can play regularly, I think he's a good player at this level. So they should be all right. But yeah, just a little bit of a note of caution that they've almost lost that home advantage for, I think they're playing over half of their home games at this new venue. So it could be something to keep an eye on.
Yeah, definitely. I do think Tochigi were a real surprise package last year, weren't they? It's going to be very difficult for them to replicate that in 2021. So Okayama, another team I'm not really feeling this year. And I don't think Mike, in our kind of season preview, we're not too optimistic about their chances, so it'll be interesting to see where they both finish up. Let's talk about Akita now, Sean. Their J2 debut ended in a 2-1 defeat away at Gunma, although I think they did okay overall. In their title-winning J3 season last year, Akita didn't concede a goal until round 7, but they were behind in just the 4th minute on their big J2 debut. The defender, Kodai Watanabe, heading in Genki Omae's corner to give Gunma an early lead. Akita levelled in pretty stylish fashion with a thumping drive from Keita Saito. That came midway through the first half, and it was set up by Shuto Inaba's overhead kick, which is worth checking out on the highlights for anyone who hasn't seen it. Akita had a few second half chances to go ahead themselves, but they just couldn't take them. And in the end, good approach play, probing from Omae, led to Junya Kato slamming in a winner for Gunma from just outside the box with about 7 minutes to go. So Gunma beating Akita 2-1. Sean, what do you think of Akita in general, and anything about Gunma that you wanna say?
I think for Akita, they need to add more to their game going forward. Obviously, they've lost some big players, mainly sort of obviously Han Hogang at the back was a big loss. I think Chida, who was sort of the regular alongside him last year, was out for this game. Eguchi in the middle of the park also was out, so I'm assuming they're both injured. I looked at the stats in the first half. Can you guess how many passes Blau Blitz made in the first half of this game?
Your tone implies it's a low number. So 90?
not bad. That's a very good guess. It was 82. Which, I mean, bearing in mind they're playing Gunma, who are not exactly one of the most expansive teams in J2. They're not a bad side. They've got a few decent players, but you know, they weren't up against, say, you know, Verdy or Kyoto or one of these teams that really like to get the ball down and move it around. So I think that suggests there isn't much to Blau Blitz's approach, and the completion rate on those passes was 43%. So they actually completed 35 passes by my math, which could be wrong because my maths is not very good, but 35 passes in 45 minutes it doesn't bode too well. And I think they definitely need to, again, they had Eguchi out, who's so vital to them, so maybe You know, just lacking a few players, maybe lacking a little bit of confidence, stepping up for the first time to the second division. But yeah, that just looking at those stats and the fact, yeah, they really didn't carve out too many chances. The goal was very nice. So obviously, when they do try and play, they've got capable players out there. But yeah, something that maybe they might want to. I often think this with certainly with J2 and with J1 to an extent, but certainly with J2, I always wonder why more teams don't kind of go for it. I think if you try and sit tight and not concede and snatch something, you're going to lose more games than you'll win. But there are enough bad defenses in J2 that if you kind of go for it, you're going to come out as 3-2 winners or 4-3 winners more often than you would if you try and hold on for a 1-0. So yeah, I think sometimes it's better to be more expansive. And Gunma, yeah, they're very reliant, I think, on Genki Omae up front. I think if he gets injured again, they might be lacking a kind of talisman. I tweeted fairly recently, he posted a video on Twitter of him practicing free kicks in training, and he's still such a fun player to watch. He's so kind of old school. He has that kind of, you know, we all knew that guy when we were at school who was the best player, but he didn't really care about playing football. He didn't try that hard. He was out sort of smoking behind the bike shed and trying to chat up girls and was still the best player out on the pitch. So yeah, he's got, I'm not suggesting that Genki Omae either smokes or chats up girls just.
It's okay, Shrekha. I can edit this out. Don't worry.
But yeah, he's just fun to watch. I think in the modern era of Cristiano Ronaldo-esque super fit athlete players, it's nice to watch someone who's just a footballer. He just enjoys playing football and seems to really, really relish in, you know, those little touches and flicks and things like that. So I think they'll probably be down at the wrong end again. And if they fall into a run of bad form, they could still go down. But yeah, they've got enough decent players in there to maybe pull away. But yeah, I think it's difficult to read too much into this result just because, yeah, Blaublitz were not much of a test, I don't think.
Yeah, fair enough. I think the point about Gunma being reliant on Genki Omae is a very well made one, though, because he has had injury problems in the past, hasn't he? And he's not the youngest, not the youngest player in the squad by any means. So yeah, we'll have to wait and see. There was a pretty exciting 1-1 draw at Fukuda Denshi, Sean, between Jeff Chiba and Kofu. So we'll talk a little bit about that game next, I suppose. Jeff lived pretty dangerously in the first half of this one. Now, the regular number one goalkeeper, Shota Arai, is out injured for a few weeks. So Ryota Suzuki got the nod to start in goal. I noticed, I don't know if you spotted this, he was wearing Yuya Sato's old number, squad number 23. So I think it must be that goalkeeper shirt that's cursed, Jeff, because Suzuki nearly gave away a goal in the first 5 minutes, didn't he? Dithering on the ball in a very Yuya
Sato-esque. Can I just jump in there? I don't think it's just the goalkeeper shirts that are cursed at Jeff. I don't think it's that simple. No, I think was it Barry Fry who went round and peed in the corner of all four corner flags? Was he at Peterborough or Southend or somewhere? I think something similar needs to be done at Jeff at some point, because
you think it's not as simple as just changing the goalkeeper numbers. Okay.
No, I don't think so. I don't think so.
Okay, well, one thing I'll tell you what, one thing that Suzuki did manage to do, which Sato didn't often do, is he got away with his mistake. So it was still 0-0 after 5 minutes. Gakuto Notsuda hit the post for Kofu as well, didn't he, shortly after that. And the visitors eventually did go in front in first half stoppage time, thanks to a pretty smart finish from Ryotaro Nakamura. But Jeff, uncharacteristically, really fought back and equalised just before the hour mark with a header from their rookie striker, Keita Buanika, scoring on his debut and looking very excited about it, which was good to see. The drama in this game came right at the end, didn't it? Sean, Kofu were awarded a penalty for a handball against Jun Okano. The angles on the replays were quite inconclusive. So I don't know if we can say for sure. No, yeah, just fancy that. But Suzuki, standing goalkeeper, did brilliantly. He saved Notsuda's spot kick. And yeah, the game ended up finishing 1-1. So yeah, what did you think about Jeff Chiba and Kofu playing out this 1-1 draw?
I think it was I think if you, someone held a gun to your head before the game and asked you to pick a winner, you probably would have said neither of them. It looks like being a draw. I think Corfu are, they're one of those teams that will always be, I think, without playoffs, I think they'll struggle. I think they're definitely in the top kind of third of teams in the division. I'm not the hugest fan of Adita, the striker they bought in. He seems to be one of those players that floats around J2 and gets a contract every year despite not doing what strikers are supposed to do and scoring very often. But they have enough good players in the squad, and they tend to bring in the likes of Notsudino, players that haven't quite ever fulfilled their potential in J1, but are still clearly, you know, above average for J2. So they've got enough decent players, and Jeff, as we touched upon before, are Jeff. It doesn't matter what players they have or what coach they have. They will continue to Jeff regardless. So this year, you know, the excitement is all around Daisuke Suzuki coming in. He's going to shore things up at the back. They've picked up Otsuki up front, and who's one of those strikers who blows hot and cold, I think, in J2. Iwasaki has come in as well, who was highly rated about 5 years ago and never has kicked on. So they tend to bring in kind of, I don't know how you call them, sort of high-profile players who've been either been good before or were highly rated and not quite kicked on. And I often feel that that's a big issue for Jeff, because these players are not particularly motivated. It's just another stop on their sort of gradual steps towards either just retirement or a role as a kind of a colour character on J-League TV shows. It's just a kind of a badge to add that they were at Jeff. Jeff are still kind of seen as a sort of a big club. I guess they pay reasonably big wages compared to, you know, the Ekime FCs of J2. And I always just wonder why. I kind of thought that Yoon Jong-hwan would be the guy to do it, to just come in and kind of clean house and get rid of these players and just go, well, you know, we can bring in good players from universities, from high schools, or good players from J2, from smaller clubs in J2, who've proven themselves by playing good football and getting results, rather than just people that were good at Nagoya Grampus 5 years ago. I kind of thought he would do that. I mean, Ricardo Rodriguez, we're seeing signs that he might be trying to do something similar at Reds, who I think are the sort of J1 equivalent club, who are very much living on reputation than recent results. And I just feel like Jeff need that. They need someone to come in and kind of build a team of players that people don't really know much about, but who are good and can get results. So I can't see them doing much this year. They'll win one, lose one, draw one for the season. They'll throw away wins in hilarious fashion, and every so often Kengo Kawamata or someone will come up with something special, and it will look like they've turned a corner, and they won't have done. So yeah, I think these two teams they'll be reasonable enough entertainment throughout the season, but I can't really see either of them and threatening to go up, but I can't see either of them being bad enough that they'll go down either.
Yeah, no, fair enough. I think that's a pretty solid assessment. I think Jeff do have their new foreign striker. Is it Saldana? It's not available yet, so perhaps he'll make a big difference when he's available.
Yeah, possibly, but again, it's Jeff, so no, he won't be. He'll be terrible, won't he?
Yeah, fair enough. Okay, we'll stay in Kanto, the Kanto region, Sean, for another 1-1 draw from the weekend. Machida and Yamagata sharing the spoils at Nozita. I can't go any further without mentioning Yamagata's socks, Sean. They have an all-white away kit, but is it sort of the white and lilac hoops on the socks?
They looked almost like stocky.
Yeah, Gifu last year in J3, Gifu's away kit was all white but with sort of gold socks, yeah. And it always looked like the players weren't wearing any shin guards, you know. So
yeah, I wasn't sure, but I noticed in one of the replays kind of was more sort of close into the action, and And I did wonder, yeah, it was like they sort of borrowed their mum's stockings or something. They'd sort of left their socks at home. And
curious sartorial choice. Well, anyway, after a goalless first half, Yamagata did go ahead in this game. Machida's captain, Hiroki Mizumoto, scoring an own goal, chesting the ball past his own goalkeeper and over the line. Machida did grab a point with an equaliser about 4 minutes from full time. It was Mizumoto's centre-back partner, Kota Fukatsu, the veteran who came to the rescue, scoring a header after a very interesting free kick from Taiki Hirato that seemed to bamboozle the entire Yamagata backline with a very kind of flat delivery. I don't know if the wind played any part in that. You mentioned the wind in the Mito game with Omiya, Sean. It was a very windy day across Kanto in general, wasn't it? And I noticed that the referee blew for full time in this game just as Yamagata had won a corner. Always something that annoys players, and I think that the referee copped a bit of flack from the Yamagata players for that.
I can't remember who it was who told me. Someone told me once that the stats for like goals from corners, and it's just minuscule. You know, people kind of always think that if you get a corner, it's a chance to score, but so few of them actually result in goals. But yeah, it is something that gets players very wound up. So as a neutral, it's always fun to watch these, you know, the players surrounding the ref as if, you know, he's basically just denied them a clear goal scoring opportunity, because of course they were gonna nod home from this corner. But I think this game was always going to be a draw. I'm not particularly successful with when I do bet on football. But if you're looking for, you know, if you don't know anything about J2, you don't know anything about football, if you see that Machida's Elvio are playing Montedio Yamagata, put everything you own on it being a draw, because it's just one of those. You know, there are some fixtures in J2 where you look at it and you go, God, you know, this could go either way. You know, you could kind of believe either team would win this. Machida against Montedio. Yeah, I was going to say it's pretty much every game, really. But Machida against Montedio is one where you just know this is going to be a draw, no matter what happens. And I'm sure someone's now going to look through the stats and go, actually, they've never drawn before. But it has that image to me that, yeah, these two teams are going to share the spoils. And, yeah, so the fact that the two goals as well both came from Machida's centre-backs kind of adds into that, I guess, that. But, yeah, I think Machida, big things were expected of them this season, myself included. I think they played some nice football last year, but just struggled for lack of depth. It seemed like Ranko Popovic was basically playing the same 11 every single game for the 6 months of the season, sort of Saturday, Wednesday, Sunday, non-stop. So the poor guys must have been absolutely shattered. And they brought in, obviously, the high-profile strikers in Chong Tese and Dudu. Tese appears to be injured now, and Dudu, the last I heard, he hadn't even entered the country, so I don't know if that was visa related, if he was having issues on with regards to immigration. But so it could be a while before he's involved. Tese, obviously, we don't know, nothing's been announced yet on the extent of the knock, but you'd assume he wasn't fit if he wasn't in the squad. But yeah, they've brought in some other players as well. I quite like, I don't know if it's Shusuke or Shunsuke Ota from Corfu, who's like a decent option in the kind of attacking midfield role. Obviously, Popovic's favourite player, Arya Jasuru Hasegawa, has come in as well and adds an experienced option who can play a variety of positions. And
I think he played up front, didn't he, in this game?
Yeah, he kind of played centre forward or just off. They sort of played almost two false nines, I guess, in him and, was it Okada or Hirata? I think Hirata played central and Okada was sort of wide in there. But then at centre back too, like last year, Mizumoto and Fukatsu, who I think have got a combined age of about 70, were pretty much the only centre-backs they had all year. And they've brought in Shohei Takahashi, isn't it? Shohei or Shuhei?
Shohei, yeah, but he's not really the guy to shore up.
He's not the guy to shore up, but I think he'll add a little, you know, it's another option. He's been around the block. He'll add a little bit of edge. And I think, you know, Popovic as a Serbian will like a centre-back who's got a bit of nastiness about him. I'm sure he'll encourage him to incorporate that, or to keep incorporating that, I should say. And Morishita, the guy they brought in from, I want to say Yamaga. I think he was a Cerezo player. I think he was at Yamaga last year. Is another kind of decent one. So they've got options now if Mizumoto or Fukatsu pick up a knock or need a bit of a breather. So Yeah, I kind of expect Machida maybe once everyone is fit. Again, I think promotion will probably be on them, but I think they should give a better account of themselves than last year. And Yamagata, similarly, a few people had them as a kind of dark horse to sneak into the promotion race. And maybe, but I think a lot rests on Vinicius Araujo, and if he can rediscover the scoring form from last season, if he can, then and he can stay fit, then possibly they could have an outside shot. But I don't know if they really have enough. They obviously lost Nakamura in the middle of the park, and he was absolutely key for them last year. So it's how they can cope without him. But yeah, I think this game, I don't think either coach will be too disappointed to have taken a point. I think Machida away is not a fixture many teams will look forward to. And I think Montedio coming to your ground is also a fixture that teams are not going to be eyeing with as an easy 3 points.
Yeah, very true. I think a point on the opening day is something that most managers will be fairly satisfied with, isn't it, I suppose. Okay, Sean, let's talk about the third game of the weekend that you watched in full. I hope you can detect the jealousy in my voice. I didn't get to watch any full games. You got three, which is very impressive. Over at Ajinomoto Stadium, Tokyo Verdy beat Ehime 3-0, with Junki Koike scoring twice in the last 8 minutes of the first half. His first goal is one of the best goals I've ever seen him score, probably the best of his career. Absolutely fantastic kind of dip in strike from outside the box. Ehime's goalkeeper, Yota Akimoto, on his debut, won't want to see a replay of Koike's second goal. Again, I don't think he was very slow to get down to that and couldn't keep it out. In the second half, some pretty awful defending from Nobuhisa Urata allowed Rihito Yamamoto to make it 3-0 to Verdy. So it was a pretty comfortable win in the end. And we should talk about the increasingly ever younger players that Verdy are bringing through. Sean, 18-year-old Mahiro Anno started up front in this game, and they had a 15-year-old Rikuto Hashimoto on the bench. He came on for the last 11 minutes of this game, actually looked pretty decent. I believe he's the third youngest J-League debutant after Kubo and Morimoto, but I could be wrong. So you watched this game in full. Sean, what did you make of it?
Yeah, Ehime, I think a lot of people tip them for relegation, and if they don't improve on that performance, then they're going down. I think your erstwhile co-host won't be happy about me saying this, but I think they remind me a bit of FC Gifu a few years ago, one of those teams that somehow keep hanging on year after year, and every year they're tipped for relegation and they manage to avoid the drop. And I think Ehime could be finally bound to drop through the trapdoor. I think, obviously they've had a lot of issues sort of off the pitch as well. They struggle to get particularly big attendances when, obviously back in the days when attendances were a thing that were allowed at football. Financial issues as well, players, best players leaving and things, and having to rely on sort of homegrown youngsters or players on loan. And this year they've gone a slightly different route and tried to relive the glory years of almost a decade ago by bringing back four or five players that started out there and then went on to comparatively bigger things in, likes of Akimoto, Urata, Uchida's come back in, Kondo came back from Omiya. So, yeah, I'm not sure. You mentioned Akimoto before, and he's a weird one because he's one of these goalkeepers that in my head I always think he's quite good, and then I watch him and I'm like, oh, he does make a lot of mistakes. I think maybe because he's quite vocal, because he's quite active, he kind of gives across the impression of knowing what he's doing and being in control perhaps, and it kind of tricks me. But yeah, he does make a lot of effort. I remember speaking to Alex Bishop about his time at Tokyo, and he wasn't a big fan. And last year, he ended up losing his place. He went to Machida and lost his place towards the end of the season to Fukui. So, yeah, as you said, it won't be a game he'll look back on with much happiness. But, yeah, Ehime didn't look great. And Verdy are an interesting one. They, as you said, they bring through a lot of good young players. They've got quite a good reputation for that. And last year, they just seemed to be one of these teams that that made passes for passing's sake, to have the stats to show that they'd made however many passes and pass completion and possession stats, but they never really threatened to do much with it. And coming into this season too, they I think what I'd say is a good way, they got rid of Yoshida Okubo and Leandro off the books, two very expensive, I assume, but not even underperforming in Leandro's case. I don't think he played a minute, so they didn't really contribute.
I think Okubo has done more in 10 minutes for Setsu Osaka this season than he did for Verdy last year.
Yeah. But I think they don't really have any recognised strikers, which was a bit of a red flag for me ahead of the season. But they sort of, it should be asterisked by the fact they were playing against Ehime, but they did a bit of a Manchester City, I think, in this game, and it didn't really matter because they have got a lot of very, very talented midfielders and attacking midfielders who were able to get involved. They were certainly helped out by some generous defending from Ehime. Hashimoto, his first, I think it was his very first touch, he could have scored. I don't know if it was included in the highlights, but he had an absolutely gilt-edged chance, which until he does get his first goal, I think he'll be reliving that over and over again, bless him. Absolutely huge chance. I still remember one opportunity I missed away to Rottingdean Village. It still haunts me on those nights when you can't quite get to sleep. It's still there for me in the Sussex County League Division 3. There you go, that's the second reference, I think, to the Sussex County League. I'm not sponsored by them.
We've had Verdy compared to Manchester City. and then in the next breath we're on the slightly lower level. It's good, yeah. Good, the full range, you know.
But he did, yeah. He looked good. He certainly doesn't look 15. He looks very, very mature, very kind of physically quite strong as well. So yeah, hopefully he'll be one to keep an eye on. And it wasn't just I know they've got a fair few injuries, I think, in midfield, so he might not get too many chances. But fingers crossed that Nagai does give him a few more opportunities and he can really develop. Because I think, yeah, J2 is a league where I think players should be given a bit of time. It isn't, as we sort of touched upon before, it isn't especially difficult. There's a bit of a jump up to J1. So I think if coaches can put a bit of trust in these players, it will only benefit them and Japanese football in the longer term.
I thought Hashimoto looked a lot like Takefusa Kubo, but I'm thinking that it might just be because most of 15-year-old boys look the same to me.
No, I think it wasn't so much sort of
play style, and his balance is very similar.
I think and it's the confidence as well. Like I do some teaching here as well, and most of the kids I teach are quite a bit younger than that. But I've taught the odd teenager, and they tend to be quite meek and shy. And he didn't. He looked very, very confident. You know, to be coming on and making a professional football debut at 15 is no mean feat. And he didn't look sort of at all fazed by that. So yeah, I think in Kubo, obviously. I don't know if you can say he still has it because he's 19 now. But yeah, when he was 15 or 16, he looked like sort of almost like I guess Wayne Rooney or someone, when just didn't, you know, just felt like he was at home and an equal out on the pitch. And yeah, he did have that kind of air. Wasn't so much his, you know, the physical look, but yeah, he had that kind of that confidence, that aura. So yeah, certainly one to keep an eye on.
We're edging closer to having a J-leaguer who was born after I arrived in Japan as well, Sean, because I noticed he was born in April 2005 and I came to Japan September that year. So I think this time next season I might be not able to do the podcast because I'll just be contemplating where the last sort of 16 or 17 years have gone. So let's move on. I think Verdy really needed that win. I think in the grand scheme of things, maybe winning comfortably at home to Ehime is not a big deal, but Verdi's squad is very thin, as you mentioned, especially up front. So I think the players will get a lot of confidence from a big win and a clean sheet in the opening round. Let's talk about another team who had a great win and a clean sheet. Sean, we're getting to the end of our round one wrap up, I think. But for Ryukyu, they picked up an impressive or surprising, I suppose, in some ways, 1-0 home win over a pretty lacklustre Jubilo Iwata. And Riku actually went in front in the very first minute, didn't they, when Ren Ikeda's shot looped in after taking a deflection off a defender who the adjective hapless could have been invented for, really, Kentaro Oi. So it was 1-0 early on. Yasuhito Endo hit the post twice for Iwata as they tried to get back on level terms in this game. And the Ryukyu goalkeeper Junto Taguchi also had a really good game in pretty wet and windy conditions, it seemed to be. Shintaro Shimizu nearly grabbed a second goal for Ryukyu at the death, but his effort was well saved by Naoki Hata in the Iwata goal. I should mention on goalkeepers, I was reading today, Iwata have got a new foreign goalkeeper joining, haven't they? Alexei Koselev. A 200-centimeter Moldova-Romanian national coming from Fortuna Sittard in the Netherlands. So don't know what that means for Naoki Hata, but I suppose his place might be under severe threat. Sean, this was a great win for Ryukyu. They didn't keep that many clean sheets last season, and it kind of felt like a continuation of last season for Iwata as well in terms of not being too impressive. Jeff Osborne at Okinawa Aussie on Twitter was asking us, how can Ryukyu have had so little possession and yet come out on top in this game? What did you make of Ryukyu beating Iwata 1-0?
I think I only saw the highlights of this and sort of read through a couple of reports, and I think Ryukyu were a bit lucky. I think Iwata probably deserved at least a point. They, from the highlights I saw, they had a lot more of the play. Yeah, as you mentioned, Ryukyu missed a huge chance late on to wrap it up, but I think that certainly would have flattered them at a 2-0 win. I think Jubilo looked all right. They played some nice stuff, as you mentioned. They hit the woodwork twice, both through Yasuhito Endo. A lot of people have tipped Jubilo to go up this year in the Japanese sort of football publications and websites and whatnot. And I think a lot of that is probably just because the people writing them are sort of in their 50s and remember when Jubilo were good in J1 and don't really watch too much J2 and just assume they've got Endo, they've got Yukiotsu, they've got Koki Ogawa, who was good 2 or 3 years ago and is sort of in and around the Olympic team thing. So I think maybe that's sort of come from I don't want to say uneducated, but a kind of a casual view. I personally am not convinced that they've got enough to challenge. Bear in mind, there's only two. I think if they were playoffs, they'd be in with a shout, because then it's more of a lottery. But I think in this game they were a little bit hard done by, and they probably deserved at least a point. And yeah, Ryukyu. I don't know. I've got a bit of a soft spot for them. I think I quite like Higuchi. I think he's a bit of a, some people don't really like him, and I think he comes across as a nice guy. I think he tries to get his teams playing nice football. He tries to get it down. And when Ryukyu are playing well, I think last year they had a couple of games. I've got a feeling it might have been Omiya. Was it Omiya they absolutely hammered? I think when they're...
They had a few good wins. I think did they have 6-1 at Matsumoto as well?
Like when they're on song, they really play some nice stuff. And I think I've made clear on Twitter once that I'm very anti players in the J League having anything but their surname on the back of their shirt. But I think the only exception I would make is for Ryukyu's captain, because I think he's just one of the coolest men in football. Uesato having just Kaz on the back of his, and Ryukyu tend to have fairly cool shirts anyway. So I just think it looks cool. So yeah, he's the one exception I would have to that rule. So yeah, I've got a bit of a soft spot for them. And I think another thing that I think sort of demonstrates the way that Ryukyu approach things, I think last season they were the only team that didn't have any 0-0 draws. I think that's right. I have just kind of glanced through and I think that's correct. So, it kind of shows that you're always going to get goals, and yeah, they're going to approach the game in a way that gives a little bit of entertainment. So, I've got a little bit of a soft spot for them.
Yeah, no, same here. And obviously, Jeff's doing good work out there supporting them. So we hope they have a good season. They certainly got off to a good start. I kind of forgot that Ren Ikeda was there in a way, and he reminded me very quickly with that goal inside the first minute. So yeah, well done to Ryukyu. And yeah, on Iwata, it looks like it could be another kind of lackluster season for them, I guess. Sean, we're almost at the end of our roundup. I think the last and probably least, because it's the only game that finished 0-0 in this round, Yamaguchi and Matsumoto. They drew a blank at Ishin Miraifu Stadium, didn't they? Watching the highlights, it seemed like Yamaguchi were on top in the first half, and then that kind of the tables were turned, and Matsumoto had more chances in the second. There were some big saves from both goalkeepers in the last 10 minutes, and then some drama in the sixth minute of stoppage time at the end of the second half. Yamaguchi did have the ball in the net, but the goal was ruled out, I think correctly, for a handball, sneaky handball by Kazuhito Kishida. So this one finished 0-0. I think Matsumoto, one of your tips for promotion, Sean, is that right, in the J-Pred?
Yes.
There. So, before we wind up, a quick comment on them and Yamaguchi?
First, Yamaguchi, I think, will be, I don't know if better is the right word, but I think there'll be a more solid team this year. And I think we saw that in this game. I think last year, under Shimoda, they probably would have ended up losing this game by a goal or two for committing 9-10 players forward and desperately pushing for the win. Here, I think this year, Susumu Watanabe will have them as a far more kind of controlled team. They'll attack when it's kind of safe to do so. They'll sit tight. I think keeping a clean sheet will be pretty big for them in that respect, because last year they didn't keep many. They were sort of similar to Mita. They were quite a lot of fun to watch going forward, but a real car crash at the back. So I think, yeah, he'd have brought in a lot more solidity in that respect. And they've got a fair few kind of nice players to watch going forward. And yeah, I'd kind of missed the handball for that goal initially. I thought it was a goal, so that would have been a bit of a turn up for the books. But yeah, I think they'll be solid this year. They came bottom last year. I kind of switched off towards the end of last season because there was nothing riding on it. I think sort of similar to J1, that it didn't really matter towards the end, and things might have gone differently if there was pressure on games. But I think they'll comfortably be away from that scrap this year. And Yamaga, yeah, I think since Kei Shibata took over partway, pretty much in the middle of last season, I think. Although it's hard to kind of remember time from last season, because it was like a whole season packed into half a season's worth of time almost. They sort of immediately picked up his predecessor, Keijiro Nuno, which was constantly chopping and changing players, formations, styles. It didn't seem like he had any idea what he wanted to do, which was odd. I didn't really know much about him, but he seemed to have impressed in getting Gunma promoted the previous year. So I was a little bit surprised at how badly that went. But Shibata came in and instantly kind of just went with 14 or 15 players and was like, right, this is who we're playing, this is where you're playing. And results and performances picked up quite well afterwards. And I think they recruited quite well coming into this year. They've got a lot more options going forward now. I'm not the hugest fan of Toyofumi Sakano. I don't think he's quite the guy you want to be building your promotion hopes on. So bringing in Lukao to kind of carry the load. Obviously, they brought in Stuart's favourite player, Yamaguchi, as well, and some other good players. I really like Shimokawa, who they've brought in, who can kind of play seemingly anywhere out wide, on the left or the right. Toyama came in from Mito, who I'm also a bit of a fan of. So they've got a lot of options, and I think, yeah, the fact that Shibata seems to know what he wants them to do, and players seem to be given a position and told that's it. I think he started playing, I forget which, is it Takayuki Mae? I think it's Takayuki, isn't it? Yeah, I was confused, him and his brother Hiroyuki. I think it's Takayuki, yeah. And he was kind of a fullback or a centre-back in his time at Renofa, and he's now sort of installed almost as an attacking midfielder. And I thought initially he was just playing there to fill in for injuries, but he seems to be now that's his position. And I think, yeah, those kind of things are important in J2, having some consistency but also at the same time having options to come in as well. You know, if someone's not performing, if someone's injured, And I think Matsumoto have good strength in depth, and having that strength and having that kind of, I suppose in business speak you'd call it a unified vision or something. I think that will stand them in good stead. So yeah, this was always going to be a bit of a tough game at the start of the season. I think opening games are always difficult too, because players and certainly coaches have a lot of time to plan for that one fixture. Throughout the season, you have a week, or last year you had 3 days, you know, to prepare for each game. Whereas coming into the season, the fixtures are announced maybe a month in advance, so you know for a month, this is who we're playing in a month. This is pretty much how they play. This is who's going to be playing on your side of the pitch. This is how you deal with him. So I think it's always slightly tricky, I think, to get a result because of that. So I think they'll be maybe slightly relieved that they dodged that bullet at the end. But yeah, I think they'll certainly be one of the teams up there at the end of the season.
Yeah, I tend to agree that the point that Mike was making in our season preview is that, like, there's been so much turnover of players at Matsumoto in terms of, you know, incomings and outgoings, that might take them some time to bed in. But I think they look pretty cohesive from what I saw the highlights of this game. And I think you're very right when you say a draw in the first match is never really a bad result, I don't think, unless you're 3-0 up with 5 minutes left or something. I think 0-0 away from home especially is okay. Sean, thanks a lot for your analysis. It's been really interesting. Hopefully we can have you on again soon and hear how things are going in J2 from your perspective. Again, before I let you go, I just want to talk about the round two games coming up this weekend. Mm-hmm. And get your thoughts on a couple of those. Something pleasing for round two, and it's something that I wish the J League would do more, is that the games are fairly evenly split across Saturday and Sunday.
Yes, right?
So yeah, we've got five games on Saturday, March the 6th, and six on Sunday, March 7th. So from the Saturday games, there's quite a few intriguing ones, isn't there? Omiya hosting Kofu, Iwata take on Machida, Kita Kyushu against Mito, also looks like it might be fun, and Ryukyu going for a second straight win there, hosting Yamaguchi. The game that I like the look of, though, is something that feels like a medium to heavyweight clash, Niigata hosting Nagasaki on Saturday. What do you think about that game, and is there any other game on Saturday that you're interested in?
Yeah, I have to say, I think that game is probably one that doesn't jump out to me, because I just think that both teams will be seeing that as a tricky one, and I think it could end up fizzling out as a result, almost like, you know, it often happens with cup finals and things where teams are so afraid to lose. Manchester United this year have been similar. Whenever they play one of their kind of the teams they see as, you know, a challenger up at the top, it ends up just being 0-0. And I think both teams in that game will be conscious of not wanting to lose it rather than pushing to try and win at this early stage of the season. So I'm not sure that one will quite live up to the billing. But I don't know. I think, did you say Iwata Machida? I think that could be... That one kind of stood out because I think, yeah, as I said, Machida didn't really perform as many had expected in the first game. Again, possibly because of injuries or absent players. But and Iwata, yeah, they as I said, they probably should have got something from the game against Ryukyu. So it will be interesting to see from these two. If one of them gets a win, it could kind of give them a bit of a kickstart. But yeah, if it ends up being another draw, you wonder if maybe Machida are gonna flatter to deceive again and Iwata similarly might not. So I think that one, yeah, both teams will be eyeing that. I think Machida, in terms of wanting to make a statement and show that they're a team to be reckoned with, that will be one they'll be looking at and saying, right, okay, well let's try and do something. And I think Jubilo, having lost their opener, will probably be desperate to avoid going down to defeat again. So maybe, yeah, on the Saturday, I think that's one that I'll be certainly keeping an eye on.
Yeah, fair enough. I think, was it Iwata against Machida last season where Iwata gave away two of the stupidest goals seen, where the goalkeeper, you know, the game where the goalkeeper forgot to pick the ball up and it went through his legs? And then I think one of the defenders fell on his face, didn't he, like 2 minutes later, and it was another goal. Pretty sure that was against Machida, yeah.
Yes, I think you might be right. Hang on, I'm going to flick through my... Where did Iwata finish? Oh, God, they finished low last year, didn't they? Let's have a look. Machida, yeah, it was Iwata won 3-2.
Oh, okay. It was an exciting game anyway.
Iwata won 3-2. Oi Uehara and Fujikawa. But yeah, I think they did. I think maybe Machida were 2-0 up. It was one of those. This happens a lot in J2, you know.
Let's hope for a repeat. I think, but based on your analysis, I think you're probably right. There'll be more chance of goals in the Iwata game than Niigata Nagasaki. That one has the potential to be quite tight. Moving on to the Sunday matches, Sean, there's some interesting looking games here as well. Sagamihara hosting Gunma, Tochigi hosting Akita. Maybe we mentioned it already on a different pod. Akita starting their J2 campaign with 5 consecutive away games. So Tochigi is away game number 2 in a row for them. Kyoto taking on Matsumoto looks like it could be a good game. Ehime host Jeff Chiba. Tokyo Verdy welcome Yamagata to Ajinomoto. And Okayama take on Kanazawa. If you had to pick one, Sean, which of those games would you be focusing on Sunday?
There's a few there. I think, I don't know, I think Ehime, they got off to such a bad start last weekend, and they've now been given a kind of a free pass because they're playing Jeff. So I think that's one I'll look at as, like, you know, I think possibly could be one to keep an eye on because, yeah, it tends to be Jeff. Yeah, Jeff do things. And I think, yeah, Ehime are a tip to go down. They had an absolutely terrible first game. I don't know, that's just the kind of game that you can see Jeff approaching thinking, well, here we go. You know, we were unlucky in the first game. Here we go, let's get 3 points. And then just getting turned over. So, yeah, maybe that one, I think, maybe a little bit a bit left field. But, yeah, I think that one is one that kind of jumps out. A lot of the other ones, yeah, you know, I think you said Verdy against, is it Yamaga?
Verdy against Yamagata. Kyoto against Yamaga.
We just discussed this before. Yeah, sort of in the mid pod green room, how we always confuse them. Yeah, Verdy against Yamagata. No, I'm not sure. I think that will be a bit tight. You can see both teams having long spells of possession without really getting anywhere. I think possibly the Ehime Jeff one is one. If I could only watch one that day, I think I'd tune into that just to see how Ehime respond to their terrible opening day. And yeah, if Jeff, you know, what new ways Jeff can come up with to provide entertainment to everybody that.
Yeah, you just never know what you're going to get with Jeff, do you? They sort of hinted that they might have a bit of steel by coming back from a goal down to draw at home to Kofu, but that doesn't translate to any kind of, you know, analysis for the next game because it could just all go out of the window again. So yeah, I think that's a good shout. I think Kyoto against Matsumoto for me, I think, could be a good one. But again, just piggybacking on your thoughts about the Niigata game against Nagasaki on Saturday, also has the potential to be quite tight, doesn't it, that one?
Yeah, I do think so. I think, yeah, both. Yeah, Kyoto, as in the Sagamihara game, they had so much possession and they did have chances and couldn't quite take them. But yeah, I just think it could be 6 of 1 and a half a dozen of the other. And both teams are quite happy to take the 0-0 or a 1-1.
Fair enough. All right, well, yeah, thanks a lot for your insight, Sean. It's been a pleasure. It's much appreciated. Hopefully you'll come back and share some truth bombs with us again on extra time in due course. If anybody's not following you on Twitter or keeping up with your stuff, where can they follow you and where can they find your work?
If they're not following me, they shouldn't bother. They're obviously not interested in what I have to say, and most people shouldn't be interested in what I have to say, to be honest.
What if they want pictures of beers, you know, craft beer tweets?
If they want pictures of craft beers, they should follow other people who drink better beers. I mean, I only got these beers to try and impress the cool kids in your gang. But if they really are desperate, it's at Sean Kyaroru, SEANKYAROU. That was harder than I thought. I've never had to spell it out before.
Yeah. Well, that's part of it. You passed the test. You know you're into a Twitter handle. That's good. Yeah. All right. Well, yeah, thanks. Yeah, thanks a lot for your time, Sean. It's much appreciated.
No worries at all. Thanks for having me on, mate. Hopefully we can chat again sometime.
Yeah, sure. No worries. Yes. And yeah, thanks as always to everyone who listens and downloads. If you're a patron, thanks for your support on the Patreon website as well. We really appreciate that too. Hope you enjoyed the pod and we'll be back next week to review the round two game. So yeah, have a good week, and we'll speak to you again soon. Bye for now. We'll be right back.